This was during the Mississippi Freedom March in the summer of 1964. Later that evening, we were visited by FBI agents from Atlanta, who questioned me about what I had seen and heard Sunday night. Since our apartment building was next to the Philadelphia police station, they were sure my husband and I had seen and witnessed something. But my husband and I had attended a movie on the other side of the square. It was very quiet, and he even commented how quiet it was, because we saw or heard absolutely nothing. But the FBI agent stated that it was hard to believe. When I asked why, I was informed it was suspected that the three young men had been abducted and jailed. This seemed preposterous. Their attitude towards me to be one of ridicule and disbelief. It was thought the three had been kidnapped, perhaps tortured or murdered. This seemed unreal, though I was aware the entire area was very prejudiced. But the search continued, but it was quite some time before their bodies were found, and they found them on some farmland owned by the father of one of the young ladies I often drove to school and back. It was much later and after much investigation that the sheriff and his deputy, Lawrence Rainey and Cecil Price, were charged with the murder, along with other rednecks. The man had been arrested for speeding, and they had been taken to the jail, and supposedly they were headed back to Meridian by the sheriff and his deputy. I was aware black and white activists were visiting Neshoba County. However, I did not know their lives would be in danger.
Did you complete your studies at East Central Junior College?
Indeed I did, and I was even elected to the Hall of Fame and received a scholarship to Ole Miss, and that was 120 miles from Philadelphia. But I did complete my requirements for my BA degree in education at Ole Miss in 1.5 years and received my teaching certificate.
Did you find a teaching job right away after you graduated in elementary education?
Not immediately, because I graduated in January. I had done some practice teaching in Meridian, Mississippi, and the principal there had suggested that I contact her when I received my teaching credentials. But Meridian was 40 miles from Philadelphia, and my thought was to apply at one of the two elementary schools in Neshoba County. But out of the clear, the superintendent at the Choctaw Indian School telephoned me and asked me to come talk with him. I was offered a job teaching first graders, and that was only a few miles from the city limits.
Did you know anything about the Indians and the reservation?
Not at all. But I was aware that Indians were treated just as poorly as the blacks were, which was deplorable. I accepted the job and prayed. And it was I who learned more that year. I had 36 first grade students, ranging in age from 5 to 10 years. And I was teaching in a secluded old workshop building with no water or restrooms. A good deal of the time was spent hydrating and dehydrating these children. The Choctaws were not promoted to first grade until they had learned the English language. Even then, there were times when I was not able to understand them, but they couldn't understand me all the time either. The school was controlled by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they were all white teachers who were teaching there. I knew of some teachers there, but most of them knew hardly anything pertaining to the culture of the Indian children, and I knew absolutely nothing. But being with the children from 8 in the morning till 3:30, including lunch, made a long day, but it passed quickly. It was fun. For me, it was a very rewarding year and an experience I'll never forget. It was also my first experience with a culture in a desegregated school, and I discovered there was little difference between other children. Even today, if there's a large quantity of Indians in an area, they still live on a reservation, and their schools are still not integrated. But they have hired, a requirement for a teacher in an Indian school now is that they must be of the Indian race, and I think that's good.
Did you teach the Choctaws another year?
I had planned to continue, but the superintendent kept in touch with me throughout the summer, but said he had not yet received permission to hire the same number of teachers as yet. By the middle of August, I had lost my husband and no longer had a reason to remain in Philadelphia, Mississippi. With my daughter married and my son in the Marines, I decided to move to Beaufort, South Carolina, where a good friend lived and taught. Beaufort had always reminded me of Gulfport, and it was only 18 miles to the beach. But before I enrolled, I thought I'd work on my master's degree and return to Ole Miss in guidance and counseling curriculum. There was no longer a need to even return to Philadelphia on weekends, so I had a dormitory room, and at my age, I had permission to leave whenever I liked. I didn't even have to sign out. And leave I did. I drove to Indianapolis quite often to visit my daughter and my first grandchild.
Did you visit with any of the schools?
Yes, when I was there during the weekdays, one of the attorneys from whom I had worked for several years in Indianapolis was on the school board there. And he accompanied me most of the time, even when he planted a tree at the high school my children had attended. It was 1968-69, and the city had followed instructions received from Washington, to some extent at least. I did observe buses transporting children, sometimes all the way across town, and Indianapolis is a big city. Most of the youngsters were black, and they had to spend a good deal of time going and coming to school. The elementary white children living in their own neighborhood and attending schools were free to go home for lunch, but those youngsters riding the buses remained in school all day. The townships surrounding Indianapolis had not been mandated to integrate when Indianapolis did, and at that time there was a good deal of white flight into the suburbs and to nearby counties. The black teachers assigned to previous all-white schools had a difficult time, and they had quite a distance to travel. There were some disturbances and perhaps some riots and fights, especially in the high schools, but nothing comparable to what occurred in the southern states.
Did you return to Ole Miss?
By the time I completed requirements for my master's in education and passed my orals, and received my guidance and counseling certificate, I was ready to leave Mississippi. My friend was still in Beaufort, South Carolina, and since I preferred the warmer weather the South offered, I spent most of the summer in Beaufort. In the latter part of August, I called the high school in Beaufort to see if they had any openings for a school counselor. To my amazement, I was asked to come in, and I was hired immediately. I attended the teacher's orientation as scheduled. It was then I learned that the court ordered Beaufort School to integrate and integrate now or lose all federal funding. I had been aware that South Carolina, with other southern states, had been procrastinating and lagging in any desegregation whatsoever. But suddenly they received stern orders. And these orders had to be completed before school opened for the 1970 school year. Only a few days away, I was informed I would not be involved in the move to merge three high schools in Beaufort County, but to report the following Monday, the first day of school. Other available personnel assisted in moving desks and furniture from two black high schools, one in the country and one in the city, to the white high school immediately. Teachers were ordered to report as well as students on that first day of class.
Was school in session on the first day as it was scheduled?
It certainly was if you call it school, since the Beaufort High School is not large enough to accommodate high school students from three schools. The Board of Education had decided on double shifts for the school year, for teachers and for students. The first shift would be from 7:30 to 12:30, with the second shift beginning at 1 to 5:30, and homeroom periods would be from 12:30 to 1 o'clock for all classes, with the 10th and 11th grade meeting in the cafeteria. No lunch would be served, and the cafeteria could be held in reserve for study periods and teachers' meetings. The first shift would include 11th and 12th grades, while and 10th and 11th grade students would attend during the second shift. Each shift had different teachers, counselors, principals, and other school personnel.
What shift did you take?
Fortunately, I worked with the first shift, and by 12:30 each day, I and other first shift personnel were free to leave, unless one of us was asked to substitute on the afternoon shift, and this became quite frequent.
What was your assignment when school opened?
I was hired as a school counselor and taught senior psychology each day, one period. I also taught any class needing a teacher because of a teacher's absence.
How well did the merging of three high schools proceed?
It was complete havoc.
In what way do you mean?
You name it, and it happened. Students and teachers were all confused, and disorder was rampant. After moving all furniture over the weekend, students had to carry their own chairs to their first period class. This would take the entire period. The teaching and administrative staff were forced to leave their rooms and offices to allow the second shift to begin.
Was there a disruptive behavior by the students on the first day?
On the first day, they seemed to be more curious and panicked rather than rioting. The faculty members and students both.
Was there busing involved?
There had to be for students transferring, living in Beaufort County from the black high schools. The bus drivers had it worse at first, those driving in Beaufort. It was sheer pandemonium as the mixed races rode together for the first time in their lives. Some bus drivers had to stop because of the verbal hostile changes leading to fights. Police cars began accompanying buses to and from school. For some students living in Frogmore, the ride one way was 25 miles.
How long did the hostilities last?
Most of that first school year, although by the Christmas holidays, there was a hiatus in slurs, taunts, and fighting. Whenever it was announced for all male teachers to report to the breezeway immediately, everyone was aware of a fight, or a fight pending.
How did the teachers, white and black, accept this merger?
Most of them didn't like it any more than the students did. A few merely accepted it. Since I was new to Beaufort, I did my assigned classes as ordered. Seating the students in alphabetical order allowed me to know their names by my chart. In addition, the races were mixed in my classroom.
How did the other teachers do?
As I walked back and forth in the hallways to class, I observed an entirely different situation. Most teachers had allowed the students to sit where they wanted to. Most of the students wished to sit with their friends. This meant the whites were on one side of the room and the blacks were on the other side.
In the classrooms where this was done, was there any interaction between the students?
Not in some classrooms. For some of the teachers of both races placed their podiums to face the students of their own race. This was done more by the white teachers than by the blacks, for some teachers were quite vocal with their views on desegregation.
How long did this last?
For as long as it took school administrators to threaten participating teachers with being fired. If any were fired, I really don't know where a replacement would come from, since the school is already using non-degreed teachers.
Was it difficult for you?
Not directly, for I had made the decision to teach in Beaufort. I was more bothered by the lack of communication between the races, and it was very difficult for me to understand some of the teachers when they spoke, and some of the students and their parents. There was an obvious distinction between enunciation, and it was embarrassing to ask teachers and students to repeat anything. At times, I never understood what was being said at all.